Well, welcome to the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast, hosted by the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter. I'm Dave Austin.
And I'm Kurt Frankham.
And we have the pleasure today to speak with Nil Harman. Nil is the CEO and co-founder at VidAngel. As CEO of VidAngel, Nil has led the company through a variety of challenges and successes, including major lawsuits from Hollywood studios, bankruptcy, the development of VidAngel Studios, the creation of Dry Bar Comedy, and distribution and growth of The Chosen. Nil is proficient in 10 computer programming languages and has a bachelor's degree in American Studies and a master's degree in instructional psychology and technology. Prior to VidAngel, Nil served as co-founder, COO, and board member at Aurabrush, as well as co-founder at Harman Brothers, a marketing services company responsible for a variety of viral ads for clients such as Poo-Pourri and Squatty Potty. Did I get those names right, Nil?
Poo-Pourri.
Poo-Pourri. Nil, thank you so much for being with us. We sure appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you. And Nil, I think we have a lot of listeners that are interested in your journey. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I was reminded of some of it as you read that long bio. It's hard for me to get out of the current moment, but I was born in Idaho, grew up working on farms, and grew up poor by American standards. And most of our family has gotten into entrepreneurship, if not all, I think. I'm the third of nine children, and love life. I'm grateful to be married to a wonderful woman from my home neighborhood, and we have nine living children. We had 10, but lost one, and look forward to raising her in the future. But grateful to be on this journey. I don't know if that's helpful, but
yeah. Yeah. So Nil, you're, there's a long list of commercials and online promotions that are just downright hilarious, creative, fun. Where did that come from? I mean, is there a lot of humor in the background of your family, or were you just connected to people who could write really funny content?
So probably a little of both. So I wouldn't say that I'm very funny. I would say that all the comedians and the writers around here say that I have a very forgiving laugh. Like, I laugh very quickly. I'm good at being the audience, but I'm not as funny myself. There are funny people in my family, and some good writing. My dad, he's always been one to look at the jovial side of life. So I would say that we've done a good job of hiring people who are funny, for those ads, and that they've done a really, really good job. My co-founder Jeffrey says that it's easier to teach a comedian sales and marketing than it is to teach somebody who knows sales and marketing to be funny.
Yeah. So
we work with a lot of funny people, and because we've done Dry Bar too, it's given us a chance to meet tons of great writers, and it's helped us in lots of areas. But those original ads, yeah, I can't take credit for the great jokes on those ads.
Nil, talk to us a little bit about VidAngel. Obviously, there's been quite the journey with VidAngel. And then maybe a little bit about how that has interloped with The Chosen. And what are your thoughts on why The Chosen is so powerful?
VidAngel, we started it for four of the brothers in my family. We started it because we wanted it for our own kids. And we actually didn't publicize it much at the time. But in 2013... when we started VidAngel, our initial thought was, if we create this great product where families have control over just the few things that they'd want to skip over in popular movies and TV shows, we'll be able to collect an audience of people who are like-minded, and we'll be able to publish better content. That was the original thought when we started VidAngel. But we thought we'd grow it to, you know, 1 million paying users, and then we would start our own studio for producing content. We didn't get that far. We tried 4 different methods for paying the studios while giving the families what they needed. And on the 4th one, Disney sued us 1 year after we started it. They won the lawsuit in California. We appealed. They asked to shut down the company in the bankruptcy process. And fortunately, the bankruptcy judge gave us time to rebuild the company. We went down to $0 in revenue in 2017. And I mean, we went from like $8.1 million in 2016, the year that we were sued, to $0 in revenue, like the first quarter of 2017, to trying to build back up. I think we did between 2 and 3 million in 2017, and then got up to 7 in 2018, and then past where we originally were in 2019, got to, I think, 11. And then last year was a breakout year for us on original content. And we did almost 50 million. So we always, like I said, when we started VidAngel, we did it because we wanted the product for our own kids, but we thought, man, if we make this really good, we'll have a group of people who want to experience content same as we do. And so when we got sued, we went ahead and announced VidAngel Studios, and we launched Drybar, and we did so to see if we could compete with Netflix and with the other big, like with HBO and their production quality for stand-up. We knew we couldn't compete, like we couldn't get the big, huge names because we could never outpay those guys, but we could compete with them on production quality, like how good it looked, and then we could hopefully find diamonds in the rough through, you know, data and through doing lots and lots of stand-up. And then we succeeded at that. And that Drybar is a bigger show than any other stand-up show or stand-up brand in the world right now. And we get, you know, we're doing over 1 billion views a year. And so we took funny comedians and gave them incentives to be clean, brand safe, family safe. And then when those two components came together, it was a bigger market. After we had succeeded with Drybar, we said, hey, we want to now take this idea and take it into more expensive productions like film or TV. And we were looking for our first project on how we do this. And another one of the co-founders of VidAngel, Daniel, when we were sued, we raised money from our customers, our followers and fans. And we raised $10 million in 5 days to help fight the lawsuit and to build the company. And I remember he called me and said, hey, if we did this same model with crowdfunding, with content, that would be really powerful. And I said, yeah, that would be super powerful. And so we started looking for how Drybar, we did it on our own dime. We paid for Drybar, but we knew that we wouldn't be able to afford to fight a lawsuit and produce film and everything if we paid the whole bill ourselves. But on top of that, we felt like from everything that we'd learned about wisdom of the crowds, that if the crowds would back a project, then they would, we'd know that they'd want it made and that we would know that it would be more likely to be a winner. So we were looking through hundreds and hundreds of projects. There were a lot of people who wanted to work with us after the lawsuit. And then a mutual friend, Matthew Faraci, he's a mutual friend of Dallas Jenkins, the director of The Chosen, and of us. he helps us with PR and relationships on Capitol Hill and everything. Matthew's a great guy. Okay. Anyway, he sent Jeffrey the pilot episode for The Chosen, which at the time wasn't a TV series. It was just a little show for Dallas's church in Chicago. And Jeffrey watched it. He came to me and said, "Hey, Neil, I think we've got our first project." I said, "Well, what is it about?" And he said, it's a show about the birth of Christ. And I said, we're not going to make our very first show about Jesus. You know, I love Jesus, but that's a job for a church. You know, it's not a job for a for-profit company. And Jeffrey just said, "Just watch it." It was sent to us by Matthew. "Just watch it and see what you think." So I trust Jeffrey's judgment on content. He's got a good sense for content. And I put on headphones here in the office, and I sat down and watched this show called The Shepherd, this little 20-minute film. And the whole entire office around me just disappeared. And I was, you know, as a farm boy from Idaho, I just was so moved by seeing the birth of Christ through the eyes of that shepherd. And I could see it was a fictional story, right? It could have happened. Maybe, you know, something similar to that could have happened. It was fictional, but it was based around the actual events of Christ's birth. But it was done in a way that, as a farm boy from Idaho, that I felt like I was there. And it clicked. And I remembered back to 2013 when we had the vision of creating a place where we could have lots of people come and experience great messages we published after we attracted this large audience of people that wanted a filter. And I remember taking off the headphones and said, "This is why we created VidAngel." When Jeffrey came up to me and said, "Hey, what'd you think?" I said, "This is why we created VidAngel," thinking this could never be made by a church necessarily. Now, that particular episode was made for an evangelical church, but the TV series itself, I could see why it wouldn't be able to be done by a church necessarily, but it could be done by the crowd, and it could be done in a for-profit format in a way that was respectful of the story, but could actually pull off what Dallas was trying to achieve. So after seeing it, I mean, we were hooked and wanted to do it, and met Dallas, and he flew out here and met us and our family, saw that we don't have horns on our heads or anything, and got to know us, and we got to understand one another well enough to know where we disagreed and on things. And he got comfortable with the fact that we didn't want to control his project. We actually wanted to honor the distinctly, you know, faithful, evangelical, and biblical script that he wanted to execute on. Like, we didn't want to turn it into anything other than what he wanted to create, which he wanted to reflect the stories that are in the Bible. And it's turned out to be, we told him when we started, we're probably going to have to raise money from the crowd for the first three seasons, because that's what we had to, with Dry Bar. We had to fund it for the first three seasons. With this project, we're going to have to do something similar, but here we are. And it was a real grind to raise the money for season one. But now that season one's produced, season one has funded through sales season two, which is a miracle. And we're very grateful. So
yeah,
that was a long-winded way to say, that's how we connected with The Chosen.
Yeah. I love that story. And I just love the dynamic of, you know, not that VidAngel is this, you know, Latter-day Saint or Mormon organization, but obviously, you know, the founders and many that have worked there happen to be Latter-day Saints. And I've appreciated seeing, you know, Dallas Jenkins be so respectful of the our church, of our background, our theology, but still realizing we can do a lot together. It's just been such a story of when we come together as a Christian community, we can create something remarkable. Is there any other stories or any more to that dynamic that you've seen from your perspective?
Unity can be messy. So it's very beautiful what The Chosen has become. Season one of The Chosen is beautiful. And I hope it can continue with that same kind of beauty and the spirit that it's had. Because I've had people come up to me. I would say just a couple of comments. One is that Dallas has gotten a lot of flack for working with us, and we've gotten flack for working with him. And it's the minority that is giving us flack on both sides. Like yeah. most people are totally willing to look past one another's differences once they know somebody. And I've had people come up to me and say thank you for The Chosen, and it's restored their faith in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which I don't think that's what that's what Dallas was trying to do.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing has happened for his people in his faith, where it strengthens their faith and it strengthened. So Jonathan Rumi, who plays Jesus, is Catholic. And so a lot of Catholics are following this project as well. And we've heard stories of people's faith being strengthened as Catholics. And to me, that's a beautiful thing. And I'm totally behind that kind of an outcome where we're doing a project together that makes us all stronger, makes us all understand each other a little bit better, or at least understand where we share common ground. I just love it. I'm humbled to be part of it, and I hope it can continue, to be honest. Cause it's like I said, unity is a messy thing. I mean, if any of you family marrying into in-laws or whatever, there's a messy part about learning to get along together as people. It happens in companies. It happens in startups. But when you meld faiths together, working on a project together, that has its issues too. But the nice thing about this team and this group so far has been that every time where things have gotten difficult or hard, that we've been able to pull through. And I'm trying to think of a specific example. I mean, you wanted an example of working together and as faiths, right?
Well, if there is a story, there may not be, but I'm just curious, maybe what it looked like behind the scenes is maybe some of this messiness came to the surface.
It's hard enough for someone to live their faith these days that I'm seeing more and more people who maybe in the past would have wanted to pick apart differences between our religions, where they're not as apt to do that anymore. There's a sense that the religious grounding of our culture is kind of on shaky ground in general. And so finding allies or like-minded people, there's just an openness there. I cannot think, or I could probably count on one hand the number of examples I'm just saying it's the exception that somebody starts picking it apart and fighting that these days. So now that said, I know it was really hard when Dallas when we got permission to film on the Goshen set in Utah under COVID. That was a real blessing to the project. We couldn't believe it. And we had tried to do that for a long time and we couldn't get through. And the day that was announced was very hard for the project because there were so many people saying, what are you doing going and shooting this project about Christ on the Mormon set? And Dallas handled it really well. He's just like, you know, if Netflix would have given us a set, or if we would have got the Game of Thrones set that's in Malta, or if we would have gotten, you know, there's a few set, or the one that was used to do the Passion of the Christ, you guys would have been cheering it on. You know, this is a set. We're renting a set for this project. And it just so happens they have the very best set for a recreation of Jerusalem that I've ever seen. And I'm grateful that we can be on this set. And then he just didn't wallow in the attacks. He just said, he treated it as a business transaction he was grateful for. And he also said that he could feel a lot of prayer that had gone into creating that set. And I think Dallas, you know, set a pretty good example for how to handle that. Anyway, there's an example for you.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that, Neil. And I know there's got to be a lot that goes in, a lot that goes in behind the scenes with everything, right? And I'm just curious, Neil, our podcast is the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast. Just curious what your thoughts are on why moral and ethical leadership is so needed in the world today.
So moral and ethical leadership could mean different things for different people.
Sure.
But when I was shortly out of college, I had planned to do a PhD, but I also had this kind of inkling in the back of my head is I think I could be a professor, but I don't know if I could be an entrepreneur, and I'm not sure I want to live my life not answering the question of whether I could be an entrepreneur. And so at this time I was becoming interested in entrepreneurship. And the first company I started working on out of school was called Family Learn or Memory Press. The product was kind of an early version of chapbooks, if you know chapbooks at all. But anyway, it was a monumental failure. But during that time that I was working on that, I talked to a guy who was part of the who had worked at a family history company before, just to get insights. And this gentleman took a whole hour with me and just talked to me and helped me understand the industry. And I felt so uplifted after being with this person. Like it made me feel like I could take on the world. I could do what I needed to do. And he made me help me believe in myself. And I guess what I would say is that when you can use lots of words to describe people, but as soon as you meet somebody who is, for lack of a better term, moral and ethical, and they live it through their core, it changes you. It changes you some to be around those kind of people. Not some. It can change you a lot. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that man who met with me for an hour even understands the kind of impact that he had on my career. I'm not sure I would be here today had we not had that meeting. I don't know. But that had a tremendous impact on me because of who he was and the amount of time that he took to help lead me. So I don't know. It's been important to me in my life because of people that I've met who've impacted me. That's all I'd say.
Yeah. Awesome. So when should we expect to see season 2 release? Is there a release date yet for The Chosen? And any other upcoming VidAngel announcements?
The goal is to release the first episode of season 2 by Easter, which I think is it late March or early April this year? I'm not sure, but it's... That's what we're hoping for. And then the goal is to release it one episode a week for the 8 weeks after that. We'll see. It's not a promise, but it's a goal. That our world's kind of unstable to make promises these days. What's next for VidAngel? So we just had two successful crowdfunding campaigns around two new projects. One's called Tuttle Twins, which is an animated series that teaches kids the principles of freedom, but it does it in a way that's funny. It's really funny. It's like, it's a little bit like Pixar or Phineas and Ferb or The Magic School Bus. It's done in a way, the writing's smart enough that parents will like listening to it and they'll learn from it. But then it's funny enough, the kids love it too. My kids have watched the first animatic for that probably a dozen times now. They love it. So I'm really excited about that. It's called Tuttle Twins, which will be coming out this year. They raised over $1 million last year to produce the first episodes of that. Wow. We also just closed a round of over $1 million for Freelancers, which was created by the original Studio C cast. They're now called JK Studios. And they've done a really good job of making a show that my whole family laughs at. And so anyway, we have some really fun projects that are coming. There's a whole bunch more. The goal this year would be to have, you know, we're shooting for, you know, we've done Dry Bar, The Chosen, now Freelancers and Tuttle Twins. And we also had The Shift in there as well. This year we are hoping we could do, we'll see. Like the goal would eventually be to where that this system becomes self-serve and people could start it without having to go through us as the gatekeepers. But this year would probably be 10 projects or so that will be going through the system. So there's a lot of great content, and the kind of content that's going to be successful on VidAngel Studios will be content that people are super passionate about. And so it'll be content that feeds you, content that amplifies light. And there's so much opportunity for the future because so much of the content out there is cynical, it's dark. We just feel like the space is wide open. So,
yeah.
Well, Neil, you're awesome. We sure appreciate this time, and thanks for your example to all of us. And thank you to our listeners. We'll be back again next week with another episode of Voices of Light. Have a great week.